This is All In. I'm Miriam Sob. Today, we're spending the hour talking about childcare in Indiana's rural communities. There's a growing push to find more support for childcare providers in rural areas. We'll learn why that's happening, what effect it's having on families across the state, and what could be done to help. We're joined now by Jeannie Lindsay, education reporter for Indiana Public Broadcasting. Welcome back, Jeannie.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
You've been working on a feature story about this topic. What got you interested in this?
Yeah, so I have been covering stuff around childcare for a while. I've been in Indiana for several years now, and part of my education beat has kind of led me down the early childhood education rabbit hole, so to speak. So a lot of the research around education, quality education at those early years has really intrigued me. Talking about brain development between birth to age five. There's a lot of brain development that happens for kids in that age. And so as an education reporter, hearing all of these conversations about policies to benefit kids in K-12, early childhood education stood out to me as one of those things that it's kind of wild that there's not as much focus on it, or that there hasn't been as much as K-12 since, learning how much brain development is going on in those ages. So from an education standpoint, just really intrigued by that. But also the ways that people have approached it because of the lack of, funding support or building it out into, K-12 public education. It just was really interesting to me how providers were trying to offer care at all, and then offering care that, was of that quality so that, children are doing that brain development. So overall, just always been kind of interested in that space. And there's been a lot of organizations that have, done a lot of work in Indiana. Early Learning Indiana has done a lot of, grants and funding and data and analysis. So there's just there are people who are talking more about it and focusing more on about it. And that kind of, I guess, caught my eye a little bit. But then as the pandemic kind of rolled out, obviously focusing a lot on K-12 schools and, students learning there, the whole childcare and early learning space was also being affected. And, those children are, a lot younger than elementary school and middle school and high school. Most K-12 kids are, in middle school, high school, et cetera. So the pandemic was affecting families and like the littlest human beings that are in existence, and then affecting families' abilities to go back to work and to do some of these things that officials were talking about, keeping the economy open, businesses, and childcare plays like a huge role in that for families in addition to the education stuff. So already interested in it, the pandemic was affecting it. And then there was a provider that I had worked with in the past on a feature about, funding and making this resource, this critical service available to their rural community. And she reached out to me and basically said, "Hey, it's bad." So I, listened and learned more, and it just seemed like something that was worth talking more about and looking further into. So here we are.
Well, when looking into sort of the rural childcare, sort of the issues surrounding that, did you find that, are these things that have been around the whole time, or is this something new?
Yeah, so there have been plenty of longstanding issues with childcare generally. And then anytime you take a general problem and apply it to a rural area, there are fewer resources and human beings to address those problems. So just the nature of rural communities being small and not having as many resources as densely packed together. Some of these have been around for a long time. So the limited nature of services and the way that some of this red tape is drawn around the industry at all, it's harder for rural communities to do things that are maybe more urban or suburban places, like it kind of seems like the basics to them, right? So there are just examples of different services that are limited in Perry County, fingerprinting for potential hires for staff. That's done one day a week, and so it's just little things like that that once they're compiled with all of the other parameters around childcare, really adds up to make a bigger challenge or another thing that has to be overcome or dealt with. And then, like I said a little bit a minute ago, the pandemic has kind of just made everything worse. Managing sickness, managing health and safety parameters and resources and materials. And so there are longstanding issues as a whole for rural communities, maybe even more intense. And then on top of that, the pandemic just really pushing people over the edge, especially with things like staffing issues and changing workforce landscapes is something that I've heard a lot about. Providers have talked a lot about staffing and the pay for staff. So yeah, it's kind of a mix of old and pandemic new and the challenges with all of that kind of compiling together.
Well, what have you heard from parents who are dealing with what's going on right now with the childcare issues in rural areas?
Yeah, so one of the things I'm really excited about with this feature is a interactive sort of web tool that we are creating that has firsthand experiences that families submitted themselves. They did all the writing to really convey how a lack of childcare or just the need for childcare has affected their lives. And so parents have said stuff in these stories that people will get to read and look through with the feature. They've said stuff about, having a provider and then suddenly having that provider close. And, maybe they were expecting their second child or their next kid, and suddenly their childcare provider that they sent their first kid to closed abruptly. So then they had to scramble and figure out, who is going to take a newborn in addition to, their first kid. They are scrambling to figure out what they're going to do for their jobs if their job is further away from, where the provider actually is. So there are parents who have had to, make decisions about finances. Having one or both parents work more or different hours to cover the costs of care, leaving work early to make sure that they can pick their child up before their provider closes. Some parents have quit their jobs. Other families are deciding, where they're going to move to. One parent that I talked to for this story was talking about, selling their house that they just bought like a year ago in order to move somewhere that had more or like any options for their childcare. There's also stories of parents who are, volunteering their time to become qualified to work or volunteer in these childcare centers to keep them open so that parents can send their so that other parents and all parents that are, at that center can send their kids there. So it's really wide ranging in terms of the experiences, but the most the biggest theme is that it's really hard. It is really hard. It's stressful. It's the word panic was used a couple of times. I mean, these are their newborn like baby children, like the treasures of their lives. And having things be so unpredictable while also trying to manage work and other aspects of your life, it's all consuming. So it's a huge problem for parents. And some parents have even said that it's made them think twice about having more kids. So it's also affecting their future family makeup. So it is really kind of all over the place, but the resounding themes are that it's really, really stressful, and they don't feel like it should be this hard for them to be able to work and to have families.
It sounds like, I mean, this has been going on for a while. And as you mentioned earlier, the pandemic kind of really pushed it to the edge here. When it comes to these providers, are they out because of COVID? Is that what's leading to like a decrease in staffing? Or is it just that there aren't enough people in these rural areas going into childcare?
Yeah, so I think it's kind of a mix. You know, with fewer people in rural areas, you know, your recruitment pool is a little bit smaller. And with some of the parameters around licensure, you know, there are certain education levels and certain qualifications that people have to have, and safety checks that people have to have before they can take on certain roles in a licensed facility. So if you have a place like Perry County that's doing fingerprinting once a week, and they're saying, hey, you know, person, we are going to hire you, but we're going to pay you $9 an hour, but it's going to be a few weeks before you can even start working, so that your paycheck is going to come after that. And so they're trying to convince people to stay on the line of hiring while they have to go through all of these health and safety hoops. And no one I've talked to said that the health and safety hoops aren't worthwhile. I mean, kids, child safety, like babies are like the most vulnerable human beings. So of course they want them to be safe, but it's really hard to, you know, if you're as an employer trying to hire an employee, telling that employee, you're going to be making just barely above minimum wage or just barely above a poverty level wage. Hang on for a few weeks without being paid while jumping through all of these hoops, so that you can come work for us and do really hard, intensive work for not a lot of intense money. So that's been really hard. And especially as workforce, you know, demands and needs have changed, especially during COVID, people just like aren't sticking around. And so that's really hard, you know, to have a limited pool of people to recruit from in a rural area. And then when you successfully or feel successfully, you know, that you have recruited someone, for them to then leave before even starting on the job, or people who come on the job, stay for a couple of weeks, find something better that pays more, that might even be easier, and then they leave. So you're kind of back to square one again. And then in addition to that, kind of what we've mentioned so far is, you know, the pandemic factor. I mean, there very much still are rules about people quarantining and isolating. And so, and when you're, you know, dealing with babies and little kids and they go home to families, where there might be more kids or older grandparents, it's just, you know, so there's still a lot of care that they have to take just around the pandemic factor too. So perfect storm.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Jeannie Lindsay, education reporter for Indiana Public Broadcasting. You can find her work on this story and more at indianapublicmedia.org. I'm Miriam Sobe. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. Today, we're talking about childcare in rural areas across Indiana. There's a complex web of consequences connected to the economic hardships many rural communities have faced in recent years. And one of them is the loss of qualified talent for unique but crucial services like childcare. In our first segment, we heard from a reporter about what things look like across the state. Now we're going to zoom in on a county and one childcare provider there to learn about how these challenges look for the workers and families facing them. We're joined now by Aaron Emerson, Executive Director at the Perry County Development Corporation. Thank you for joining us, Aaron.
Hi, thank you. Glad to be here.
I want to talk a little bit about what you do in Perry County and how you're involved in childcare before we get into a deeper conversation here.
Yeah, absolutely. So my day job is the executive director of our county's economic development organization. But I also serve as the volunteer board president for our county's only licensed child care center. So it has become an integral part of my daily life, just keeping the center open and operating. So I'm not technically on site there, but I am extremely involved and have been since we got up and running about 6.5 years ago.
And you mentioned it's the only licensed child care center in the county.
That is correct, yes. We have the capacity for 53 children at our center. And in our county, we have over 1,200 children under the age of six. in all our capacity for licensed care is about 77 seats for over 1,200 children.
Wow. That's, I don't know what the odds are on that and getting a spot.
Not good. They are not good. And we are starting to see a trend of people as soon as they are beginning to think about having a child trying to get on wait lists because the lead time is just that bad.
So what got you involved in this program and being part of it?
Yeah. So through our economic development board, we meet quarterly with our local employers and really just talk to them about what are their business needs, what is maybe a barrier to growth. And in 2013, those were conversations that we were having a lot, and childcare was a continual topic that just came up over and over again for their current employees, but also for the workforce and the talent that they were attempting to attract from outside of our county, that it was just a huge barrier. So because of that, we did about 2 years of planning to get up and going. And in 2015, we opened a center. It actually opened operating 24/7, which is kind of mind-blowing looking back, but those were the work schedules that our local jobs were. So we were trying to meet that need. We did that for about 6 months, and it just was not financially sustainable to operate 24/7. We kept weekends, but then about 6 months later, we ended up having to cut out weekends as well. And our current hours of operation are 4:45 a.m. to 5:30 p.m.
That's still a pretty big range of hours. Yes. Is it able to accommodate folks with schedules that call them in early or overnight?
We are currently not able to do anything beyond those hours, but we do get a lot of parents that drop off as early as we open because those are the shifts that they work. And we also kind of have that time zone thing where some of our neighboring counties are in Eastern time zone. So parents need to leave that much earlier. So we do get kids that get dropped off and they lay back down and go to sleep, and we get them up and get them sometimes on buses to actually go to local elementary schools as well.
That just breaks my heart in a way, just hearing the struggles of having to find childcare and work. Can you give us a sense of what childcare looks like in Perry County right now? It sounds like there's not enough of it. And for folks who might be listening, they might think, well, can't you just open another center?
If only it was that simple. Yeah, absolutely. There is just a tremendous need. Like I said, with over 1,200 children under the age of six, for those 1,200 children, there are three licensed childcare options. So there is our center, which, like I said, has a capacity of 53, and then there are two licensed family homes for a total capacity of 77. So we do have some other options in our community, but when we talk about those, I think it's really important to qualify what are we measuring here. And I think that we're having all of these conversations because of workforce and because parents do need to go to work. So these childcare options that sometimes get counted when we're looking at the overall inventory, I think aren't really solutions for families. If we're talking about maybe a program that is 2 hours a day, 3 days a week, or a program that only runs during the school year from, you know, 8 to 2. And there are also different age and income requirements for several of those types of programs. So when you end up narrowing it down, and if you're a parent just looking for care, you have very, very, very few options. And our wait lists for all of our rooms really illustrate that. We have wait lists for every single room that we have, and some of the wait lists are even longer than the actual room capacity. So the likelihood that a child will be able to actually get in is not great.
Yeah, I mean, I can totally relate to some of this stuff just when my kids were younger and the childcare and the wait lists and all of that. But I mean, I had the advantage. I was lucky enough to have a spouse that worked so we could juggle things around. But I'm I'm imagining for folks, it's not that easy. And you know, what are their options right now if they don't have a backup plan? They just aren't able to advance in their career and they have just no money?
Yeah, pretty much. There are, in Indiana, there are vouchers that exist for low-income families to be able to access high-quality childcare. And that really does serve as that kind of option to allow a parent to be able to get into the workforce. But those are accepted by licensed providers. And we have very, very few children in our community that are able to take advantage of those vouchers because there's just simply not spots for them. They can get access to them and they can qualify, but when it comes to actually using them at a center, they just do not have those options. So I do think that we, in terms of workforce, have a lot of parents who could be part of our workforce that simply are not able to, that just do not have any other option, or they are piecing together solutions that are not good for families or for children. Kids may end up sitting, you know, in front of a TV all day long because they don't really have anyone to be there to interact or educate them. And I think that that has implications down the road that we know, like Jeannie was talking about in the beginning of the segment, about when we know that the most rapid brain development is happening in those first 5 years. But yet there's really no structure, and it's kind of a no man's land for parents.
What is it that's needed to create more options? Obviously, funding would be probably one of them. I guess I'm wondering, like, how does that work to get funding, to get a center up, and then be able to afford employees? It seems like there's a lot.
There is a lot, and definitely funding is the number one piece of the puzzle that kind of has to be figured out. There is also just the operational expertise. So we have been in operation for 6.5 years, and I would say that daily operations right now are just as difficult as they were the day that we opened. And COVID does have a lot to do with that, but this still, childcare is a highly regulated industry with zero profit margin anyways. So when you're doing this in rural communities where you have limited access to the goods and services that are really necessary to fall within those licensing guidelines, it really, you know, one thing can be hard, but then when you just have a whole list of things that are really hard, it's like a constant puzzle trying to figure out how to fit it together to meet licensing requirements and still stay open. And I think that that's really daunting for a lot of potential providers when they look at how kind of broken the system is now. It's like, how would we, there is no money to be made at all.
How do you keep going in this field? I mean, it sounds really like there's just a lot going on. And is there any relief in sight?
I think a lot of it just has to do with like sheer stubbornness and perseverance. And there are, like I said, I'm a volunteer. I'm not like a paid employee of the center, but I'm also a parent of a child at the center, and also in rural communities, you have tight knit communities. So not only my child goes there, but, you know, my friend's children, my co-workers' children, it is meeting such a critical role in our community that giving up just doesn't, it's not an option. But the funding piece is really where we have to figure out that sustainability. There have been some stabilization grants through the state, which give us a little bit of breathing room. We were able to raise our wages as of January 1st, but you know, those are temporary grants. So we're okay financially right now. But what will next year bring and the year after that? I don't know. I don't know how this becomes sustainable because we are currently, we do not pass on our full cost to parents. Like the actual cost that it takes to provide that care is much greater than what our local market can bear. Families just could not do that. And there's about a $260 or $260,000 a year difference that we have to figure out annually. How do we make that up? And a lot of that is volunteer in kind time. It's constantly seeking grants or things at the best price you can possibly get it. It is just trying to be extremely resourceful all the time.
Do local businesses play a role at all in helping with funding?
Yes, they do. And they were absolutely critical in getting going. Our startup was completely funded by local businesses, and we would not have been able to do this without them. But when you look at that huge financial gap, it just becomes year after year after year. That's a tough ask. And I really think that when we started this in 2013, we just didn't fully understand that this is for the long haul. You don't just, I think we all wanted to figure out how to get it financially sustainable and then be able to say, okay, look, there we have a childcare center. Okay. But that was a misconception. I mean, that won't happen. It's not financially possible. So it is hard to get that type of sustained support year after year after year.
How common is this in other rural communities around the state? Is this unique to your area, or do you think other counties are facing similar situations?
I used to think that it was unique to our area, and I used to really feel like, what is Perry County doing wrong? What am I doing wrong? Why do we keep failing at this and cannot make it work? And then thankfully I was able to connect with another rural community who had similar struggles and have since connected with many. And it is absolutely not unique to Perry County whatsoever. I think it's just a really common storyline in rural communities where, you know, well-meaning groups of citizens get together and say, we need to address this issue. We're going to figure it out. We're going to open a center. They get it up and going for a few years, and then it folds because simply put, it is almost impossible to, you know, constantly fundraise to keep the doors open while also trying to have mostly volunteers manage the day-to-day operations of a center.
What would you say is something that could be part of the solution for childcare centers in rural communities to be able to thrive?
I think that we've got to, again, reframe the value of this. And if we, until we figure out how to make this work, there will always be workforce issues, and we won't ever be doing anything productive about our future generations. So there has to be kind of that buy-in from industries that have no connection whatsoever to childcare, that we are all truly in this together, and we've got to come up with a solution. But like we talked about, I mean, funding truly is at the core of this.
Is there anything you think employers should be doing just to contribute to the solution?
I think there are a lot of different interesting models of things that communities are trying. And I know that you're going to be talking to someone a little bit later about some things that their community has tried. And I think that that's definitely worth looking into.
Well, before we wrap up, I guess if you could leave us with what's important about this, like what's at stake here if childcare isn't addressed.
So much. I think when we think about as a state that we really do want to grow, that talent attraction is kind of the focus of the state right now. And it has been of our rural community for the last several years. And so when we think about it through that lens, what good is all this recruitment that we want to do if there is no childcare? Like what new family will come to a community without first securing childcare? And when you look at these communities that simply don't have options, we're really cutting ourselves off.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us. One final question, is there anything that you are working on right now that seems to be attainable for Perry County?
Well, we have recently hired a new executive director, which is really exciting for us. We've gone through a lot of transition. And so, kind of figuring out, like I said, we have a little bit of breathing room from those stabilization grants. So, it is exciting to think about someone else on site there handling those day-to-day operations of, okay, do we have enough staff today? Or who needs fingerprints? Or do we have interviews? Not having to worry about those types of things really hopefully will free us up to kind of pursue that long-term funding that will be necessary.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Erin Emerson is Executive Director at the Perry County Development Corporation. We'll be back after a quick break. We're talking about the state of childcare in some of Indiana's rural communities. If you want to get in on the conversation, find us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana, or leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Sobe. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. Today, we're talking about the dire state of childcare in some rural communities across Indiana and what could be done to turn things around. With us now is Adam Olson, president of Appleseed Childhood Education and the owner of Olson Farms. Thank you so much for joining us, Adam.
Thank you, Miriam. Thanks for having me.
I want to talk about your history with this before we get into what's happening. When did you first get interested in the childcare situation where you live and why?
So, that's a good question. So I'm a farmer, and my wife is a writer, and we have two kids. Now they're 3 and 6, but when our oldest was about 1 year old, we needed some help, right? We needed some childcare help. And in Rensselaer, which is in Jasper County, which is where we live, there was a licensed childcare center. And when our son was about 1, we said, hey, let's go check this out. We did. I had a bunch of preconceived notions about what childcare and early learning was, right? It's daycare, it's babysitting, right? It's what poor people do, it's what poor people use, it's what families use that don't have any other support systems around their family. Then our 1-year-old son went to the childcare center that existed in Rensselaer, and he thrived. And, both my wife and I, we saw what true early learning is, what true high quality early learning is. And unfortunately, in 2018, that center closed while our son was going there. After that center closed, my wife, Carly, myself, a couple other people in the community, we started to look at this. That the lack of a licensed early learning center in Rensselaer was a problem. And, we tried to get creative about how do we solve a problem in our place that has been historically a problem. And, there's this issue's been tried to be addressed in various ways in Rensselaer for probably a good 25 years. And we haven't figured out a way to, right, historically, Rensselaer, we as a community, we haven't found a way to solve this for the long term. And then out of all of that, we formed Appleseed Childhood Education in January of 2020. That's the worst time to ever start a nonprofit, by the way. And out of that, we are going to open a high quality early learning center in Rensselaer for 70 kids in 2022.
And how many kids did you say?
70.
70. That's a pretty decent amount of kids you'll be able to serve. I mean, it sounds like what led to this was sort of trying to find a solution and creating something to address that. Did you ever envision that you would get to this point?
I didn't envision I would. No, I did not. So I grew up in Rensselaer, and I moved back here about 10 years ago. And I didn't think we'd be leading the charge on early learning movement in Jasper County. But here we are, and it's great. We've got wonderful partners. Appleseed's got wonderful partners, and we're trying to think about how do we. You know, actually, we're trying to think about how do we solve the problems that Erin talked about in the last segment, right? It's like, how do we bring operational expertise to an area in this space that we don't have? You know, and then the next question is how do we solve the funding problem, right? So for-profit business model doesn't work in childcare or in early learning in rural areas. And it's a really complex and it's actually a really interesting problem to try to solve.
But what made it possible for this to actually come together instead of it just being an idea to actually have something that tangible that's going to open up?
So we have strategic partners locally. So first off, we would not be here without the local community foundation, which is the Jasper Newton Foundation, and the executive director, Brianne Hooker. They've been in our corner since the beginning of this, provided us with some seed funding to get organized, pay for some consultants, pay for some, some marketing and advertising and communication strategies around the advocacy side of changing how we think about and how we talk about early learning and childcare in a rural area and in Rensselaer. We have the support of the local economic development organization. We have the support of local businesses. And most importantly, you know, we have the partnership with an experienced operator, Right Steps Child Development Services out of Lafayette.
If you're listening to the program and have a question or comment, we are live. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All in Indiana, or leave us a short voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. Again, that number is 866-476-3881. We're speaking with Adam Olson, president of Appleseed Childhood Education and the owner of Olson Farms. Adam, is there a model that you're implementing here for this center that's different from other attempts elsewhere in rural communities?
Yeah, we do. I think the biggest thing for rural areas is, you know, Jeannie mentioned it earlier in the show, and Aaron did as well, is just there's not a whole lot of people in rural areas, right? And with that comes, we don't have experts for everything in rural areas. So what we're doing differently is that we've partnered with Right Steps Child Development Centers, and what their role will be is in our center in Rensselaer is they will one, manage the day-to-day operations of the center. And then they will also manage all of the administrative and also licensing and regulatory side of operating a licensed child care center. That is a massive amount of the time, you know, that it takes to it is a massive amount of time to make sure that staffing is done appropriately and payroll gets out, and then also licensing requirements are followed, and managing the regulatory and bureaucratic side of state and federal funding programs. Right Steps is going to do that here in Rensselaer. What that means is for us as a board, we can focus solely on the funding side of this. You know, and when I say funding, you know, it is at the end of the day, we know, and we've known since the beginning of this, that we cannot pass along the full cost of care to families in Jasper County. Families can't afford it, right? The cost of care to provide high quality care in Jasper County is $14,000 per child per year. We know that families cannot afford that. And, you know, so what we're doing is we're saying, hey, the question that we're asking is we're asking our community and saying, hey, is this something for a whole bunch of different reasons, right? Do we as a community want high quality early learning in our community? And up to this point, we've had a great response to that. And a lot of people are saying, yes, it is important to us, and we are willing to fund what you're doing.
And just to clarify here, when you're talking about high quality early childhood learning, and not to disparage other forms of childcare, would you say this is different than if somebody has their home licensed as a place for kids to be able to come while their parents go to work?
Yeah, no, if there's, there is, it's a different, I guess the way that I think about it is, a licensed in-home provider can provide just the same quality care as a licensed center can. An unlicensed provider, can provide the same amount of care and same quality of care that a licensed provider can. Well, when we say high quality, we mean, the center is going to be nationally accredited. It's going to have, meet certain educational, requirements, right? So, it's effectively what we're saying is you don't have to take our word for it, right? There's a third party body that has come into our, and seen our curriculum and see our, the way we do things and say, hey, yes, this is something that is early childhood education.
And would you say that in the past, these types of education opportunities for early childhood have just not been available in rural communities?
Yes, they have not. It's hard to do. It's hard. It's hard to find the staff. It's hard to do the payroll. It's hard to do the scheduling. It's hard to find the executive director of the center. It's a lot. And what we're doing here is we are bringing that expertise to our area that has historically not had it.
Right. And with the historic efforts, or I should say the lack of efforts historically in what appears to be in these rural communities. I mean, do you think any of that is the government's responsibility to come in and fund things or participate in some way besides, it seems like, community members and families trying to come up with solutions?
I'm going to sidestep that question and say that, the way that I think that it's up to community. I don't think there's a community that, like for Rensselaer, right, in the community that I live, is, the way I think about it, whether it's we're talking about childcare or actually anything else that's an issue in a community that's Rensselaer size, and it's about 5,000 people. If we want to solve the problems that we have as a community, we have to solve them ourselves. Not many people from a state or federal standpoint tend to listen to what rural areas have to say about much. And so, the tact that we're taking, and I believe this, is that, local communities can solve our local problems locally.
With regards to you mentioning just, it's hard to get folks outside of the county to listen or pay attention. Do you feel that way about folks who live in the area as well? Are they as tuned in, even if they don't have kids, for example, and aren't worried about childcare?
No, I think that people are very tuned in into this issue. The events of the last 2 years, right, the pandemic has brought, all sorts of different types of, all different kinds of care and educational sides of things, right, it's come to the fore, right? And I think there has been a peaked interest in the idea that, early childhood education and early learning is important, right? And how people think about that is always a little bit different, right? If people don't have children, right, if they're business people, right, there's an economic development and there's a workforce side of things, right? There's a lot of large employers in our community that have help wanted signs out, right? And, a very easy way to increase the amount of people that are in the labor force of an area is say, hey, are there kids? Do you have kids and you want to go to work? Hey, we have a really great place for them to be. An older person that isn't a business person, right? They've probably got kids and they've probably got grandkids. And, the idea that, hey, you know, I've had many conversations with grandparents that say, man, I wish, you know, we start talking about Appleseed, talking about, you know, childcare and the lack of it here. And I've had many conversations with people locally that say, man, I would love it if my kids and my grandkids lived in Rensselaer, but they don't. They live 3 hours away. And, you know, one of the reasons that they said they could never move to Rensselaer is because there isn't childcare. I think the tides has turned in our area, and it's exciting to see, actually, Miriam.
Yeah, it also, I mean, just thinking future wise, as you were saying this, how families or grandparents wish that their kids or grandkids could be there for that. I wonder how much it would change the dynamic in the community, and just something as simple as childcare. And I know it's not simple, but I mean, in general, like having childcare and what it could do for communities to thrive and grow.
I think in 2022, the idea of communities the size of Rensselaer, you know, we have to attract people here, and we have to attract young families here. And one of the major barriers to that, you know, for our place, I think, is that we don't have this thing that, you know, if you go to Indianapolis, right, if you go to Lafayette, if you go to Chicago, that, you know, or any of the suburbs around any of those places, it's available, right? And that means that the parents can do what they want to do. And that also that the children can also have wonderful educations, right? And have a wonderful experience between the ages of 0 and 5. It's something that I think we have to have. And, you know, I'm pleasantly surprised that the amount of kind of cohesion around this issue that we've been able to garner in the last year.
Well, what are you hoping for in the coming years?
So first off, this year we're going to open a licensed early learning center in Rensselaer. We view this as proof of concept on our model and how we're doing things. We as an organization, we think that what we're doing can be replicated in other rural communities in our area. You know, this is an issue not just for Rensselaer and Jasper County. You know, there are other communities in Jasper County and in surrounding counties and, you know, in the northwest part of the state here that have the same issue. And, you know, we look forward to replicating what we're doing here in Rensselaer and other places in the next few years, which is exciting, right? That's exciting. That's, you know, like,
It's great to hear, you know, just the excitement in your voice and what you're looking forward to. You know, my kids are older now, so I passed that phase, but I definitely know that's a huge impact that it can have for families.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us. Adam Olson is president of Appleseed Childhood Education and the owner of Olson Farms. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you, Miriam.
Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at All in Indiana. You can always leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. Again, that's 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Soap. Thanks so much for listening. This is All In.